What is up, you beautiful people? Welcome back. It is lovely to have you. It's time for another episode of the Built on Bitcoin podcast, where we're covering everything going on in the Stax ecosystem. And this is my second conversation with a Stax OG, Zan Ditkoff. He is the founder of Demon Technologies. At this moment, he is in the future. Because he lives in Hong Kong, he's always a day ahead, which still just, I hear that and it kind of makes my brain hurt. It's kind of cool to think about. But yeah, the last conversation, if you haven't heard of it, I recommend it. But it went so well that we decided that we should do a second one because there's so much more to cover. We're also doing weekly Twitter spaces on Monday at 4 p.m. PST. If you want to pop in, there's kind of like community calls where we just riff on whatever happened that week or whatever interests us. And yeah, check it out. Zan is a wizard of Stax knowledge, so I recommend checking those out. But this episode, we talk about Citicoins. We talk about their new OnStax platform, which is at onstax.com. Which is going to be a front-end a data visualization, but also an API back-end for developers to pull data into their dApps. So, yeah, great conversation. We covered a lot. It's always good talking with Zan. So let me shut up and get in this conversation with founder of Demon Technologies, Zan Ditkoff.
Welcome to Built on Bitcoin.
I was going to say, let's not lose any potential gems before
Exactly. Yeah, and this time I'm going to do it Zan style. I don't have a ton prepped. I didn't do a whole lot. We're just going to like see what the hell happens out of this magic.
It's all, I got a lot we can get into. And I like the idea. I mean, if you're down for it, for doing like a Twitter space once a week or something, and
yeah,
it can be as short as 10 minutes, can be as long as however long we both have. But yeah.
I mean, as long as we keep the people engaged, and I always get like nervous on the front end that I'm going to lose things to talk about. And then I'm always like, what am I guess I'm just so new that I haven't, my training wheels are still on, but
no, I don't think it's that. I mean, it's, I'm at least self-aware enough to know that for better or for worse, like I got a lot of rabbit holes I can go down and I can fucking talk.
Yeah.
So for better or for worse, I don't think that's the problem. We may have some other problems. I don't think that's a problem.
Yeah. Well, you said you might have some things that you want to go down. What's been on top of your mind lately?
Today I think we got to celebrate or celebrate soon. I need to look at the Explorer and see what block we're at, but
for 2.05.
Yeah. Happy 2.05 day.
I think we have like 6 hours as of right now.
Okay, so I thought we had a few hours left, but that'll be today for me. So it's Tuesday morning here in Hong Kong. I can't really turn my computer, but today kind of looks like the background. So it's a nice fall. Fall's really nice here. But yeah, so happy 2.05 day.
Yeah, that's big.
Pretty exciting. I mean, this was like for a non-like breaking change to the protocol, this was like about as big of an upgrade as I think it gets. And like
since mainnet, this is the biggest thing since mainnet that's kind of happened.
Yeah, I mean, well, I'm trying to think. Yeah, probably in terms of the core protocol. And just in general, I think for kind of non-hard fork breaking changes, this is about as big of an upgrade as you can kind of get.
And how does 2.1 relate in that?
So 2.1 is... all right, so 2.05, for those that don't know, and you know, there's definitely some technical experts that can actually give people the exact underpinnings of the specifics that are changing. But the high level recap basically is it changes the limits in terms of the blocks that miners mine a little bit. So it can include more data, and it also greatly increases the accuracy of cost estimation. for running contracts. You know, the original way that the network did it took a very conservative approach, which I think is appropriate for, you know, the early days of a brand new layer one, where, you know, to use your exercise analogy you had on Twitter, you know, if you're going to go run a marathon, you'd rather run a little slower pace-wise per mile than you think you can to make sure you can finish the race, mm-hmm. versus going out at a 6-minute mile and then, you know, blowing up halfway through.
Similar
kind of logic here. You know, the protocol would overestimate the cost of running computation. And as a result, people would overpay, computation could take a lot longer. And in some cases, this was like by an order of magnitude of like 10 times. So quite a bit and quite inefficient. This makes the estimate quite a bit more dynamic and a ton more accurate. This is going to be really helpful for dApps like Arcadico running on the network, like StackSwap. It's also going to be changing the economics for miners a little bit. And, you know, we'll look back at this data and kind of see what we think. But, you know, miners should have the opportunity to be a little more profitable just because there's kind of more that they can process per block. But it also does increase it's not super relevant for any miner, but it's worth mentioning. It does increase the computational power needed to mine just slightly. But before anyone gets worried, what I mean by that is it makes it moves the kind of barrier from being able to mine on a Raspberry Pi to, you know, you probably need a standard laptop to mine now. So it doesn't really, you know, negate any of the narrative around, you know, ease of mining. But yeah, so that's kind of the 2.05 upgrade. It's going to be meaningful for the network, and it is, you know, some big changes, but it's really just kind of tweaking how the network estimates cost and just kind of the size limit of blocks. 2.1 is, I mean, God, I don't even know if I have if I remember the full list of kind of changes that's pushing, but I'll, you know, from my perspective, some of the most important ones and the changes that myself and team are waiting for some of the projects we want to do, and we can definitely get into that as well, is there's a lot of changes to Clarity, a lot. And I'm not the best person to go into kind of the technical underpinnings of the exact changes, but I can kind of go into the high level of what they're going to enable for us and for others. You should definitely have Marvin or someone similar on to kind of talk in depth about Clarity pre 2.1 and then kind of Clarity post 2.1. But one of the biggest differences is Clarity will have a lot more ability to do things with Bitcoin and Bitcoin state. That's really, really meaningful. Right now, you know, Clarity can kind of be triggered by some things on the Bitcoin state, but it can't actually control any kind of Bitcoin or be kind of triggered for more complex things. So a good example of this that, like, we're waiting for 2.1 to see if we can move forward on is this idea of mining pools. So we, you know, people have kind of been talking about this in the community for a while. We've actually had a number of designs drafted up for mining pools for a while now. And the biggest blocker for us is, up until now, to create any of them, it's going to be a very custodial setup. You know, if we're operating a mining pool, we're basically going to be taking custody of the pool members' Bitcoin and then using it to kind of mine on their behalf. That one is a pretty trusted setup. You know, you can do some things to de-risk that, such as putting up, you know, a large STX bounty that can be slashed if you, you know, are do anything nefarious with the pool's Bitcoin. But the bigger issue for us is it just brings in a ton of regulation. You know, that's pretty, a system like that would be one where we would potentially need to only offer it to accredited folks for now, and we would maybe even need to get them to sign certain kind of documents. Post 2.1, though, we should be able to create the same type of system, but where a lot of that flow, a lot of the custody of the Bitcoin is actually governed by Clarity contracts. So getting much more to a world like stacking has with delegation and pooling, where that can all be done by kind of signing and sending messages and via smart contracts. So that's one kind of big thing that's being added. There's a lot of other primitives being added to Clarity too that are going to be important for some of the other little side projects we have. I haven't really talked about this anywhere because it's still super early and tentative. So I'm not going to mention any names, but Demon and some of the other folks in the ecosystem have been in talks with some of the bigger layer one interoperability providers between layer one chains in the past month or two. And we've actually been working on a testnet implementation of one of these and exploring a few others. And one of the big things we'll need to actually create a mainnet implementation of this and see if we can get the deal solidified and move forward with it are some of these primitive upgrades to Clarity. So there's a whole host of other stuff going live with 2.1 as well. But 2.1 is really adding a ton of things that aren't in, you know, Clarity, I think, is probably one of the biggest areas that we're just didn't have time and more than didn't have time, you know, I think took more of a conservative approach launching the network without them, with the idea that, you know, they can kind of be added in later. So, you know, the other big difference too is 2.1, I think, is a breaking change to the network. Like it's essentially somewhat of a hard fork or a soft fork. Whereas 2.05 is less of a kind of a breaking change. But what's been awesome to see with 2.05 is just the level of, the level of, it's not coordination because it's just all different random people in the ecosystem and the community, but how people have kind of come together from all the different things they work on and focus on and all the different companies they're at to all dive into the discussion, actually flesh this out pretty quick, make decisions. Just the way the governance process has gone with it has been really cool to watch, and makes me, you know, really, really excited and optimistic for the process of the 2.1 upgrade. So,
yeah, it's one of those things where like everyone was on board. We all want, you know, better calculation and whatnot. But for some reason, it could have gone a different way. Like we needed consensus from everybody involved. It just so happened that it went swimmingly.
Yeah.
But this is kind of like the first test of this proper decentralization and getting everyone on board. Do we have, I think I saw on Twitter, one miner's not upgraded. Do you know anything about the ratios of everyone upgraded? I'm sure you guys.
So I think everyone is upgraded. Yeah, this is a little embarrassing. That's actually our miner that Jude was calling out. I just a miscommunication. I think we should be good now, but, I was told we had been upgraded like a week ago. And I think there's just a miscommunication where we'd upgraded the node, but maybe not the mining software. So anyway, yeah, always appreciate Jude coming in on the bullhorn. I think every other miner is upgraded. You know, it's interesting. I don't know for sure. I know for sure because Jude would be on the bullhorn. He's about them. But, you know, as kind of a Twitter thread came up yesterday of people like kind of wondering who's running miners and how many are run by like former team members of the Blockstack PVC core team. And, you know, it's interesting because as I was saying, I don't know, actually. I mean, I know one or two of the other miners, but that's it. You know, Demon runs one and I know Xverse runs one. But aside from that, I don't actually know who the exact miners are. I know, like, I've heard one of the miners is kind of a loose pool where it's kind of a bunch of partners who are, I think, mostly accredited folks who have kind of loosely joined together to kind of pool their Bitcoin for mining. And other than that, I like really don't know. It's nice to see that despite that, there's been, you know, an ability for miners to kind of all come together, make decisions and, you know, upgrade pretty much in unison. So that's, yeah.
it's interesting because I've seen that thread pop up a few times where you'll see legacy Blockstack members go off and do something dope, but within Stack still. And like the two biggest, probably more prominent ones are you for mining and then Patrick with Citycoins. And I think there's like this, people get this idea that like you guys are still attached to the hip to the foundation or something. And there's just like a pipeline of funds going to Citycoins and they're almost like Trojan horses that look.
Oh, interesting.
I think people think that it's like faux decentralization.
Yeah, I mean, that's fair. I get the skepticism. I mean, I've been in this space for a hot minute, and there's no lack of faux decentralization. So I probably speak to Patrick at this point like once every couple months. I've been following the Citycoins thing, but from a distance. To be perfectly honest, I like didn't really follow it that closely at first until Mayor Suarez like actually accepted the funds.
And that was a big one.
Yeah, that was a big one. And then I think it was decently soon after the committed amount got to over like 20 million or something. And so that caught my attention. But you know, it's actually not something I've paid attention to just because it's really not relevant for like where Daemon sits and both geographically in the world. That's probably the main one, but also what we kind of focus on, at least for now. That I could very much imagine changing in the future. But you know, one, you know, I'm in Hong Kong full time. And especially with the pandemic, I've basically been here for the past 2 years. You know, my team is spread across Asia. I have a couple engineers in China, head of product and design in Malaysia, front end engineer in Egypt. And so, you know, I think as we've become more aware of the Citycoins project, we've become more and more cheerleaders kind of from a distance on Twitter. But, you know, from where we sit in the world for the main thing, it's not like the most relevant in terms of something that we're looking to work on or really facilitate at the moment, because like I get the model in the US, but I think it's something that if I was working on that, like I'd have to be on the ground there. And actually like there's a lot of that that has nothing to do with kind of the technical underpinnings and kind of servicing that I think is much more the job to be done. You know, from what I've seen, the back end of the Citycoin stuff is not, I mean, it's the contract's not super, super complex, the POX Lite. And, you know, the one thing I have talked to Patrick about, you know, very briefly, like, hey, would it be interesting to think about doing a Citycoins type thing either for kind of a city outside of the US, you know, maybe something that's a little more like a city state like Singapore, or, you know, for kind of a small country. And, you know, I think he really has kind of a vision there. And for him, I think, you know, we'll get there one day. And I think maybe when we get there, Daemon will help play a little bit bigger of a role in kind of rolling that out and servicing it. But, you know, for now, I think he's smart kind of keeping it to cities in the US. You know, it's a very, especially at this point, now that we've had kind of the success of Miami coin, you really want to be careful and kind of slow and calculated with kind of adding new cities and new projects to it. You know, and you want it to kind of go the way I went with New York, where there's almost already buy-in from the local government and populace before that goes live. So, you know, I've heard Patrick's working with some folks on rolling out additional cities and in the future. But yeah, it's not something we've been involved with. For us, you know, all of our capital in terms of Bitcoin wise that we earn from stacking pretty much goes to mining. I mean, it's a pretty capital intensive business. And as well as just operations, you know, the nice thing with stacking is it allows me to kind of pay most salaries in just in Bitcoin, which is just so much easier. And on the stacking side, you know, we have a lot of that locked up. We've committed a lot of it more to kind of traditional uses in the ecosystem. So like to the accelerator, for instance, is kind of a big one that we've committed a bunch of stacks to. And then, you know, the kind of remaining liquidity we have in there, we actually put into the dApps themselves. So versus Citicoins, that's like providing liquidity for Arcadico in their vaults. You know, we'll do the same for Alex when they launch. So yeah, we actually don't hold, nor have we ever mined any Citicoins at Daemon as of yet. You know, can that change in the future? Sure. You know, I am interested to see how NYC coin goes. I'm a native New Yorker. So that one kind of hits a little close to home, but, yeah, for now it's, you know, we're focused on, deploying capital in the ecosystem just in different ways that is a little bit more aligned with what our operational focus has been so far.
Yeah. I think I've been following Citicoins closely. Actually, Patrick was my first guest, so shout out to Patrick. But I think it's at that stage where you guys start doing the unsexy stuff of like, there's still businesses in every city that don't have a website and they're not going to use Wix or whatever. They need some random person to walk in their door and sell them a website. And you got to do the ugly work of like talking to the person, getting their needs and doing that. I think we need to build primitives on Citicoins at the ground level that can easily be extracted to every city, but you got to figure out like, can you slap a sticker on the window like Grubhub, but it could say accept Citicoins or whatever it is.
Yeah.
And do that kind of thing.
Yeah, that's a good idea. Yeah, I call that the doing things in the Paul Graham school of doing things that don't scale. Mm. Yeah, it's super important. And yeah, you know, it's you're hitting on something that I think is really spot on with the Citicoins that folks have kind of been asking questions about when they look to evaluate it, and they're trying to figure out like, you know, do these have value? Will they continue to have value? Why not? And I think I saw a Twitter thread, or not a Twitter thread, it was a Reddit post from the last few days in the Stacks subreddit that basically was to the effect of like, you know, someone thought that as more and more Citicoins come online, it's actually going to cannibalize the Citicoins that, you know, were earlier, as people kind of hop to the newer, hotter thing. And I think about it a little differently now that I've like started to look into Citicoins a little more and kind of think about where they may go in the future. I actually look at it as a great forcing function that gets exactly at what you mentioned, Jake, which is, you know, right now in a lot of ways, and you know, when Miami coin launched and started growing, for instance, you know, a lot of that is driven by the excitement of the launch, the excitement for this, you know, new type of funding mechanism. But when it actually comes to on the ground utility of the token, you know, it's fairly limited to start, you know, right at launch. Now, I think the really nice thing as more and more come online is it actually creates this competitive element around creating and adding utility to that funding mechanism for each city. So, you know, the way I look at it is, yeah, Miami coin won't necessarily be valuable in the future if no one does anything with it and it just continues to be a token that's mined and just earns, you know, the way that becomes more valuable, and this is true of any kind of network and token and dApp, is, you know, doing the unsexy work to add utility to that. You know, I think a great example we're already seeing with Miami is Mayor Suarez is trying to see if there's a path to actually paying citizens out with a Bitcoin dividend. Like, that's a huge piece of utility that Miami would be adding. And it's going to put pressure on places like New York or anywhere else that is using this type of funding mechanism to be like, oh man, well, we have to do that too. You know, what else can we do? And to your point, what is unique about that city and that community that these funds can kind of be directed towards? You know, at the end of the day, Citicoins is a unique funding mechanism. The kind of key is, what is that funding directed towards? How is it distributed? And what does that look like over time? That's, I think, the kind of green pasture we're getting to in terms of like, I think you're 100% right in terms of what you hit on. You know, launching these is exciting. And I think we should, you know, keep focusing on strategically launching more and more and more cities to kind of spread the distribution of this funding mechanism. But, you know, even more importantly than that is once you know, a city coin has been launched, it really comes down to the unsexy work of doing things that don't scale and like adding utility. And a big part of that is really just educating people on, you know, this new resource that they can leverage in ways that in a lot of cases we haven't really even thought of or experimented with yet. So that's what makes me really excited about the future of city coins. Yes, I'm excited for more cities to launch, but what I'm actually much more excited about is the cities that have already launched. How are they going to accelerate the experimentation of what this kind of funding primitive is used for? What utility are they going to create around that for their citizens?
I agree. I'm actually pretty excited for when the protocol matures enough that you get like a random city like Chattanooga or something, and like it doesn't have the cachet and culture to be like, okay, we're going to mine New York coin. But if they have a good tech hub and they can actually innovate at the local level, I think you can see at some point a city coins project actually attracts tech people to that place, because it's a signaling function and they're executing.
Yeah.
I think that could be dope.
Yeah, could be as well as things like partnerships between cities over city coins and things like that. Yeah, no, there's
tons of ways. Yeah. I was thinking too, like the Bitcoin yield thing is amazing, but it doesn't get more people to mine, which is the kind of like that's the thing that feeds the whole system. And so it's going to onboard people to crypto, and it's going to give them the best asset they can get, which is BTC. So that's incredible as far as getting people onto crypto. But I was trying to think of ways, like at first I thought we need to get people to mine. How do you do that? Maybe you can have like an automated mining pool, and then it has like a proof of mining that is like an NFT or a pass or whatever to show that like, hey, you spent some of your hard-earned money on mining, which is going to the wallet, so it's a whatever. But I think you're actually right that it's more of just making the coin more useful in whatever way you do that, and that's going to drive the mining incentive for the people who want to do it.
I think it's both. You know, I think you need to make the barrier to access as low as possible, and you need to, you know, that's kind of the supply side, and the demand side you need to focus on as well, which is, you know, even if it's super easy to get my hands on this thing, why would I want it? I'm really looking forward to kind of seeing how that evolves. It's been really cool to kind of watch it from a distance, because I don't really see anything else in the market like it.
Yeah.
So it kind of speaks to kind of the unique building block or primitive that is kind of proof of transfer and stacking, and kind of the ability to layer that in really interesting ways.
Yeah. This will probably be a left turn for a second, but you mentioned Paul Graham. How do you structure your day as far as a maker versus manager schedule? How do you balance those?
Maker versus
manager. So his idea is like managers schedule the day out like minute by minute, hour by hour, and they always know what they're doing that next day or that next week. And makers or creators block out long periods of time for nothing, but it's creative time.
Yeah, no, great question. It's something I've definitely been getting a little better at. You know, I think the pandemic, especially in this space, can be tougher for the maker side of things, just because, you know, I think it sucks you into being on call all the time. And it's very easy to basically, you know, not structure your week and then end up with 10 hours of meetings and calls a day. You know, I don't know if that's necessarily managing, but, you know, it's potentially neither, which is, I think, where you really get in trouble. But, you know, where I've gotten with it, where I think is decent is, so one, I don't keep like a minute by minute schedule. I like a little more flexibility than that, but I do kind of high level structure my days a little bit more around one or the other. And I like to have kind of a split, you know, at least 2 days that are a little more maker focused during the week. And then, you know, the other 2 to 3 are a little more manager focused. So, for instance, Mondays, you know, I try not to have that many calls. It's kind of easier as well to do it on Mondays, because the time zone here, we're we're ahead most of the world. So Monday, you know, until Monday evening, the rest of the world is kind of still on their Sunday. So things are a little quieter, and that I really like. You know, I call that kind of blocks that are kind of crossed off for deep work. That can be writing, it can be doing a lot of reading and thinking of, you know, the latest research and just looking into new projects that I haven't looked into before. You know, for me, creativity is kind of a huge part of this. And the thing I love is the way I see things, you know, everything's the same, kind of that maker mentality, that creative side. The work we do in the space here is it's the exact same as any sort of creative work. The details are kind of different, but, you know, I'm a big photographer too. And the creativity there is no different. It's basically trying to stay present and letting your mind basically take a bunch of information that you've consumed or that you've been exposed to, and kind of recombinated it in interesting ways that kind of create different aha moments. You know, that I think can, that is the same process and can result in, you know, an incredible work of art if that's your kind of focus with it, or it can also result in incredibly innovative and novel technical mechanisms like stacking. You know, stacking I think is kind of a good example of, you know, that wasn't me, that was actually the former head of legal for PBC. Like, it's funny, people think like, you know, oh, an engineer came up with that, but like, no, you know, Jesse, I think it's a perfect example of how creativity and creative thinking really is the same across any discipline. And, you know, the work, the process is really the same. The details are different, but no matter what you're doing, it's kind of the same. And he, you know, I think was just doing a lot of deep thinking and really putting on the maker hat for a long time, and came up with stacking as kind of a unique mechanism that could be added to proof of transfer, and, you know, thought through the game theory pretty deeply. So I really need that in life, period. You know, the time to kind of allow myself to do that, whether it's, you know, with the stuff Demon's doing in the Stacks ecosystem, or just, you know, on the weekends, kind of outside of my like strict work focus, you know, whether it's photography or other things. And then I think that really feeds my ability to be a better manager and be a better, you know, do some more of the grinding work. So like Tuesdays is a call heavier day. We have our team call. So it is quite a bit more kind of high level management, trying to figure out like, are we heading in the right direction? Are we making the progress we want to? Are our hypotheses being validated? So yeah, I kind of split it up like that. And, you know, maybe there's one day that's a little half-half, but even on my pretty strict manager days, you know, I make a point to take time out to kind of have that decompression or meditative time. Like I meditate daily, actually. So, you know, for me, even if it's a pretty management heavy day, I'll probably take an hour. My brain and body kind of tends to go through a little bit of a slump productivity and energy wise around like 3:30 to 4:30 PM. It's funny. It's always been super consistent, like with that timing. So I will usually take some time then to like meditate a bit, or just grab the camera and go through for a walk through the neighborhood, you know, and just kind of think about things. But, yeah, that's kind of how I do it. It's worked decently so far, but I also think it's a good topic to be very open to experimentation and kind of change with, and just kind of go with what you feel is feeding you to do your kind of best work.
Yeah, totally. I think it's one of the things too, where especially when you have your own business, it's easy to get consumed by working in the business and not on the business. So you don't take the time to kind of like take the bird's eye view and you're just responding to calls and doing the next thing the employee wants.
Yeah, it's the classic. It's really easy to be busy, and busy is in no way necessarily productive.
100%. Yeah.
How do you do it? What's your kind of
poorly for sure? I feel like, well, I still work a full time job, so
yeah, which makes it even tougher.
Yeah, so my balance, especially being in a relationship, is constantly fighting for time, and so the way it's working right now is, luckily, my process of putting these videos out is getting more and more streamlined. So I can save some time by honing. I can edit faster. I know what the thumbnails are going to look like. And I also just care less once it goes out, because before I'd put it out there and I'd double check my text and I'd make sure it played back properly and I'd do all the things. And it would take like 4 more hours. Now I'm just like, I hope it's not broken. And I post it and I make sure that the podcast is out and the YouTube is out. And then I just let it go. And then I work on the next thing and I spend no more cycles on it. But yeah, I think my my current scenario is much more manager. I pretty much have my whole week mapped out and I'm always burdened by things. So I'm always trying to like claw out an extra hour to get more stuff done. But
yeah.
So I'm working towards getting more to that like creator space where I can just kind of like sit and think. Like that's why I did that analogy. That's kind of like me taking a second to think and then just spit it out there. And that's like, that's almost my meditative state for a little bit.
Oh no, that's, I mean, that explanations like that in kind of your own words and kind of picking something apart, trying to understand it, and then kind of restructuring or putting back together that explanation in kind of your own way, I think is super valuable. Both, it's something I do constantly to kind of make sure I actually understand something, but I think it's also super valuable for others as well. You know, like just in general, education on this space is still kind of a crapshoot, and it's still really like the learning curve is difficult to find and also pretty unforgiving to get into the space and understand what's going on and start being able to have any sort of barometer for like finding the signal in the noise. And I think, you know, one of the big things there is a lot of what I think we're tackling, like the problem areas we're tackling in this space are really do kind of require a going back to first principles in terms of not just how you think about things, but actually understanding at a first principle levels, like what is money? Like what is a social contract? How do those function in society? How do those mature? How do they change? And with that, you know, I think providing your own versions of your aha moments is super helpful, because everyone, like there's something different that makes it click for everyone. You know, I remember when I was at that stage too, and it was, you know, it was kind of this incremental process of like just taking in a ton of information. And for me, like finding like the little aha moments where I was like, oh, okay, I think that I think I get that now. Mm-hmm. And then just trying to build those on top of one another, which, you know, it's still a process I'm very much doing today.
Yeah, it's the whole thing of like, if you can't explain it to a 6-year-old kind of thing, like if you feel yourself stuttering or using big words, you're probably to like pause, you don't know it that well, and go back to the basics. But I agree. I think the big thing we need right now, and maybe you can help me in real time think about this, we need more devs building on stacks. And mm-hmm. I think that people, there's tooling coming out for Clarity, or education coming out for Clarity with Clarity Universe and things like that. But I think people need to see comparisons almost, like how does ETH compare to Clarity, or how does building on Rust on Solana compare to Clarity / Rust on stacks, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. If you were in your growth role again, and that was your task, what would be like your first, second things you would do? Because I'm going to do them.
So I can mention a couple of things that are already in process, and then we can maybe go off on the brainstorming train. But so one of them, you know, the current projects that are launching and will continue to kind of launch over the next year, coming out of the accelerator's first cohort, you know, that train is keeping on chugging. I think the accelerator right now is vetting through projects for the second cohort. Really excited to see what kind of comes out of there, given the kind of strength of the first cohort.
By the way, I just talked to this morning. I talked to Truebit, which they're building like a user-owned data mm-hmm. marketplace. I talked to those guys this morning, and they're from the first cohort. So yeah, that's pretty cool.
No, there's really cool stuff, and like I think, you know, those projects aren't just launching, they're as they launch, they're branching out into some really interesting things too. You know, I was just talking to the Alex team about their launch and how they're actually going to have a launch pad basically for other projects to launch in the Stacks ecosystem. You know, you can think of it as kind of a PokéStarter style, like launch pad almost. When they go live. And so, you know, we were talking about that. And I was actually mentioning to them, you know, with all the exciting stuff that's been happening in the NFT space on Stacks, I was like, man, you guys should enable like NFT launchpad projects on top of this thing. Like that would be awesome.
Meaning instead. Like you can upload your collective
are you familiar with kind of how different launch pads work, whether it's like
PokéStarter?
So basically in the NFT example, you know, right now people can kind of do an NFT drop where, you know, you can do some combination of things to get whitelisted, and then you can, so this is kind of the same thing, but the launch pad kind of creates a market mechanism around the launch where people can, there's kind of a competitive element to the project actually launching and people competing in various ways to actually get the initial kind of assets that are launching. If you look at PokéStarter and kind of the projects that have launched on that, it's a way that, like in a lot of ways, like IDO, initial DEX offerings have kind of gone through that route. I think with a fungible token, you know, that can be interesting. I think with NFTs, it's a lot more interesting in terms of like an auction mechanism for launching this versus just kind of dropping it into a bunch of people's wallets. And you can create some pretty fun like competitions and games around that. But yeah, anyway, just to say like, I'm...
Does this have corollaries? Does this have corollaries to how Product Hunt kind of works or no?
Yeah, kind of, actually. Okay. If Product Hunt, I think, is more... It'd be like if... it's kind of a combo of Product Hunt and Kickstarter, in
okay.
a way.
Okay, that's making sense. Yeah.
But no, so all of that's to basically say, like, I'm actually still really focused on all of the projects launching and to be launched from kind of the first cohort. But Trevor and team are already, you know, very much attention turned to kind of the next cohort and a few additional things that are going to be added to that or kind of in parallel to that. I don't know, maybe I'll get in trouble for mentioning this because I don't know if it's I don't know if anyone's talked about it publicly yet, but like a great example also, I think, of, you know, what I would do with the growth hat on what is happening, to go back to our discussion around the Citycoin stuff, is actually creating an accelerator track for people building things around Citycoins. So, you know, I think like that's, you know, we're seeing some of the more innovative stuff happening, you know, with those tokens and kind of, you know, things that aren't even like that really like technical expansions of those projects yet, like, you know, Suarez trying to get citizens of Bitcoin Dividend. But now if you can actually incentivize developers, like to our point about building out the utility and adding more value for Miami Coin, like if you can incentivize developers and kind of open their eyes to like, don't just think of building on Stacks, like, are you in Miami? Like, is this your tech hub or is this a tech hub you're interested in? Like, you can actually build on top of this novel funding mechanism to like enable people to do different things with Miami Coin. And I think creating incentives and kind of a funding pipeline to do that is something really interesting that I hope happens. But so, you know, that I think is one. So yeah, all of those are ways of pushing that further development and more people building. I think the pulling side of it really comes down to what you were saying before in terms of education and tooling. Things have gotten a lot easier, you know, over the last few months in terms of building with Clarity, building on top of Stacks. Obviously that is going to naturally continue to some degree, just as the more and more projects launch and the more that are built on top, the more existing examples and kind of primitives there are. But, you know, I do think it's also important to remember, like, the network's not even a year old, which is pretty crazy to think about. And with that, furthering the Clarity education is kind of a big, big thing, both in terms of just access to it and quality of it. And then, you know, two, I think, is just building blocks getting more and more building blocks for developers that are building on top of stacks already, so that they can increasingly focus on the core product that they're actually building and not all of these, you know, ancillary things around it that, you know, they need to build the core product, but are not the core product itself. You know, this is pretty relevant to it to different degrees with every layer one chain that's out there. Obviously, ecosystems like Ethereum have a lot more maturity around this, but even there's, you know, the space is kind of still filled with projects that are recreating the wheel and kind of duct taping a bunch of stuff together around their core product versus just, you know, a good example is, and this is just a natural process of kind of tech maturation, but, you know, if you're building a Web2 project these days, you can build a pretty complex like Web2 project without even being kind of a full engineer and like fully coding yourself. That's a good example of like how much that world has matured to allowing people to just focus on the actual product that they're bringing and, you know, finding product market fit for that product. So I think, you know, we want to do the same thing in the Stacks ecosystem. Part of that is just improving clarity tooling, but part of it is, you know, things around that have nothing to do with clarity. You know, at Daemon, I think I mentioned this last time we talked, we're launching a data platform. The version one actually should come out in the next couple of days. We'll do a blog post and kind of Twitter blast with it. But, you know, the kind of initial goal there is pretty simple, which is just to give everyone in the ecosystem a lot more transparency, not just into mining, but we'll have our own version of the Explorer, and we'll also have support for different protocols there. So, for instance, we'll have a bunch of dashboards for Arcadico where you can see the different TVLs, the different ROIs for the vaults, you know, all kind of relevant data around that. But the more meaningful part there that we're kind of thinking about and looking to bring to market in this vein of increasingly allowing teams to focus on the product they're building versus the enabling tech is kind of the backend API setups that we have. You know, we want to increasingly provide teams who are building dApps on top of Stacks with the infrastructure so that they don't have to worry about, you know, building their whole kind of data backend to pull the data they need on chain to, you know, leverage that for whatever they need to leverage it for. They can increasingly just come and plug into our backend infrastructure to kind of do that. And, you know, we're just one of the people doing that. I think, you know, I would imagine there's a number of folks. You know, same thing even for like just running Stacks nodes, things like that. You know, I think the more plug and play those things become, the more it enables developers to focus on the core product they're building and not have to worry about all these other things around that are necessary, but aren't really core to that. So, yeah, I mean, that I think is kind of the path forward. You know, to your point earlier, it's kind of this grinding, just kind of do things that don't scale type stuff. But yeah, I mean, I think it's the focus for the next year. And I'm super excited for the next year personally. Well, this may be a little controversial, maybe not. But like I've never seen, you know, I've been working on Stacks for God, it's almost 2022, which is kind of crazy to think about. But yeah, like four coming up on 5 years now. And I've never seen as big of a market opportunity for kind of alternative layer one networks, but specifically Stacks, as I do kind of in the next year, especially because, you know, I think Ethereum is still going to continue to do very well in the market. But you know, Ethereum's kind of shown the failure of that model, you know, putting off any discussion of the switch to ETH 2.0 and whether or not I think there's any hope of that solving these issues. But, you know, for the moment, at least, like the Ethereum network is unusable for your average person. I mean, one of the reasons that I think, you know, the biggest struggle of a lot of the NFT and kind of gamify play to earn space on top of ETH right now is like one, I think that stuff's awesome and it's super innovative. And I'm really excited to see that start to come to Stacks with projects like Moonray. One of the things that I think is really stunting the maturation of that innovation on ETH is just like it's impossible to do new user acquisition because, you know, the person that would be your average user cannot use the Ethereum network right now. I mean, when you're paying like $200, $300, potentially up to $500 in gas fees, like people need to think about this in terms of like the average person. Like I send two transactions and it's like, I could do that or I could buy myself like a PlayStation 5. Like,
yeah, when even trying to get to layer twos sometimes, like I tried,
I tried
to use Polygon and there was like a Mebits thing on, it was a Mebits thing on Arbitrum and they're doing a specific launch on Arbitrum. And I was like, okay, cool. I guess I'll try it. People are talking about it. I'm early so I can get on the whitelist. And it cost me, I bought $50 and it cost me almost my whole thing just to potentially get it to Arbitrum. So I'm like, this is going back on Coinbase. I'm just going to.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, I think I'm not going to get into a discussion of kind of the longer term prospects for Ethereum, but I think in the immediate, you know, immediately right now, Ethereum has kind of failed in terms of like, it hasn't failed as a network. It's not going to die. I'm not necessarily saying that. But I think this moment it's failed at being the technical provider for the innovation that's happening and allowing that to progress to the next stage. So I'm talking a very zoomed in the moment failure, you know, but it has like you can do a post-mortem on this in terms of like, you know, why it's gotten to this space. And I think that opens up a huge possibility for, you know, obviously you've seen networks like Solana and Avalanche capitalize on that opportunity just with their narrative, let alone, you know, the tech they're bringing. But, you know, the thing is, I think Stax One like is on par with Solana, if not maybe a little bit more ahead in terms of the technical maturation. Now, I think they have a little more momentum and hype in terms of public perception, which I'm not discounting at all. That matters a ton in the short term, like an absolute ton. And I think you've seen that play out for them over the past year. But I think as we, you know, move forward into, you know, 2022 and beyond, like those networks too are going to come up against, you know, as they continue to be more and more successful and attract more and more people to build on top of them, you know, they're each going to go through their challenges of scalability. As you know, as is Stax to some degree, but the thing where I'm really excited is, you know, I think we know where we go when those challenges kind of present themselves. I think the opportunity in the market and public perception and momentum for Stax in, you know, throughout the next year, regardless of what the broader market does, is just it's absolutely massive.
I'm picking up small data points around the ecosystem that make me feel like I have a cheat code almost. Like being in Stax right now is like ridiculously good opportunity. And it's things like Mundeeb will say, we have no goals that are not 10 years out, like long-term vision. And then you talk to you and you're talking about it's turtles all the way down, meaning, you know, it's everything is stacked on top of each other. And that means you have to be very cognizant of how you build the one and the two and the three and the four. And what's interesting is that I think that ETH is actually, the people I'm seeing are acknowledging that reality, which is that they're saying that ETH is the L1 of all blockchains, almost like they're the interoperability layer. And then you just build up from Ethereum, but it doesn't go low enough because you need Bitcoin as your base. If you're gonna go to that thesis, or you just use something like Cosmos.
Exactly. If you're gonna go to that thesis, it's kind of, you know, what you then need to kind of hyperanalyze the purpose and job to be done by the base. And you know, that's a much longer discussion we can maybe get into next time in terms
for sure. But I think I hear that and I'm like, okay, I like that. The fact that they're thinking that and Stax is already doing that, like we're good. You know, like it's
Yeah, and I mean, you know, we've always said, you know, it's a marathon, not a sprint, you know, and it's been, you know, obviously the market's hit some choppy waters in the last week. But, you know, it's the thing I love about being in the Stax ecosystem is, you know, we're kind of that, like, obviously there's a lot of new people, but, you know, so much of the ecosystem is kind of filled with these I would almost call them like old war dogs who, like, you know, stuff starts blowing up all around us and we're just, you know, sitting there just yeah, like,
the vets.
Ah, we're here again. Cool.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know how many people know, but like, you know, Stax has been working at this since like 2013, the kind of path to where the ecosystem we have today, the community, all of that has been, you know, kind of non-traditional compared to a lot of companies or a lot of projects in the space. You know, I think it started just as this idea for like a naming decentralized DNS kind of service built on top of, you know, originally this layer one called Namecoin. Then very soon after that, I think in 2014, you know, migrated to Bitcoin. You know, kind of refining that idea through Y Combinator as really just a technical R&D project, like in 2015, raising, you know, a small Series A to kind of, or a seed round, and then A to kind of try to validate that use case and kind of product. And then, you know, when I came in 2017 was when the very first version of the network was about to go live, which just enabled decentralized naming and data storage on top of Bitcoin, but almost with Bitcoin itself, like Bitcoin being kind of the native asset, which was very limiting. But, you know, it worked as a layer one network. And I think it created one of the first broader ecosystems of dApps. You know, by the time we had dug into that for bringing that to market for the first couple of years. But, you know, today with the tech and the network that we have, the ecosystem and the community that exists and that's kind of building around it, I think that lineage is really important in terms of creating this view of it's really a marathon, not a sprint. And we're so early in this. And, you know, I think tactically it can be okay to in the moment chase things like hype and momentum and things like that. But I think we kind of have a deep understanding that strategically, which, you know, difference between strategy and tactics, you know, tactics, I think of more like in the moment tools that can help you reach different longer term strategic goals. Strategy is a little more overarching and, you know, longer term, what's my North Star? What are we really aiming at, you know, 3, 5, 10 years down the line? You know, strategically, I think we have continued to build a good muscle as an ecosystem for taking that long view and, you know, kind of recognizing again, like, I'm super excited for the market opportunity for Stax over the next year. But I think, you know, I say that with a view to like really the next 3 to 5 years and how I think that's really on more of a macro level our opportunity.
No, that's good. I guess we'll just call it there. I'm gonna test my audience, see how active they are. So if you guys want a Twitter Spaces weekly from me and Zan, hit us up on Twitter, say when Twitter Spaces, and we will do it. So
yeah, I like it. Send a tweet out with that too, and I'll retweet it. We'll see if there's any interest. I think we can kind of structure it to begin with just as like a casual chat about current kind of events in the Stax ecosystem, things we're excited about.
Yep.
You know, maybe in the broader space as well, can make it collaborative to open it up to other folks coming in, talking, asking questions, and then, you know, can bring some other folks in too. You know, if there is demand for this, I think we can bring some folks in, not just from within the Stax ecosystem, but potentially from outside of it. Well, you know, I'm close to some of the core Solana guys, some of the guys creating some of the newer GameFi projects and guilds around those. So okay. I think we could branch it out to some interesting places, but
I love the idea. Okay, cool. Well, I'll let you get on your call, my friend. Talk to you soon.
Fun as always.
Thank you, buddy.
Thank you.
Welcome to Built on Bitcoin. I know that things don't always go your way, but I'll be right here waiting. I've been waiting now. I've been trying to figure out a way to make it out. Make it out, 'cause I don't think about